Welcome to Vetted by Mark Vetter, the Micro K-12 podcast around everything technology for K-12 schools. I just literally met Dr. Jeremy Sullivan from the North Kitsap School District. So welcome, Jeremy. Great to know you. Where'd you come from? What do you do right now?
Oh, yeah. So I'm the Director of Technology and Innovation with the North Kitsap School District. We are located on the north end of the Kitsap Peninsula, so across the Puget Sound from Seattle. I have been a part of the education community here in the Pacific Northwest for 4 years now. Came out here from Missouri, where I was working in Springfield Public Schools, and just have absolutely fallen in love with both the education community out here in the Washington area, and then also just with the area in general. But we love it. I came out to launch the one-to-one initiative within our school district, and then have just really hit the ground running with all the new opportunities in education technology and moving the work forward for kids.
So it's 2025. So you showed up right during COVID.
Yeah, I actually I started consulting with North Kitsap from Missouri, like February of 2021, helping them through the COVID journey. And then, like many districts, especially smaller districts, North Kitsap was able to use the funds that were available then to go ahead and launch a one-to-one initiative that was greatly needed, especially to deal with some equity concerns. And so we took advantage of it and rolled it out. And it has been a roller coaster ride ever since.
Are you one-to-one K-12?
We are. We're one-to-one K-12. We initially, because we launched during COVID, we had all devices actually going home. So that way we could switch to remote at any time. And then once things seemed to calm, we brought our elementary devices back into the building. So every kid has their own device that they use each day, but our elementary kids stay in the classroom unless the family needs it at home to access resources, or if the teacher needs to send one home, if the kid's going to be out, we want to make sure that they have those resources available.
What platform do you use?
We are Google School District. That was one of the big changes also that brought me out here, is when the district was looking to go one-to-one and looking to adopt Chromebooks, they had been a Microsoft district up until then. And so my background was Google. And so that was one of the things that brought me out here too with them, was helping them make that shift to the Google platform.
So you left Missouri to come to the rain shadow of the mothership in Redmond. Yeah, switch it to Google.
Exactly. Well, what was funny is when I was initially starting the conversations with North Kitsap, I was like, can you please give me a rundown of your platforms? I want to make sure I'm super up to speed. This was even before my interview. And they were like, yeah, well, we're a Microsoft district. And I was like, okay, I've been dual platform before. I can make that work. But the superintendent at the time was like, but we're transitioning to Google, and that will be a large part of your work, is transitioning the whole system to Google. And I was like, okay, I can do that. Google is my wheelhouse. Yeah. Microsoft, I know, but Google's just what I've always done because that's what my previous districts used.
Who does staff use?
The majority of staff use Google, so that way they're on the same platform as kids. We do have, like, our CTE teachers have access to the Microsoft suite. And if there's a legitimate need for access to the dual platform, we make that happen. So especially anyone that's dealing with our state agency of OSPI, we want to make sure they have Microsoft, just because everything gets downloaded, it's submitted through Microsoft or OSPI. And
do you do that through M365 or through through actual Windows 11 machines?
I've been on Windows 10. So now we're in the process of moving everything to Windows 11.
Getting it done by October.
Yes, exactly.
So we hadn't talked about any of this before.
No,
but this is an area of interest for me, because you have your most secure data on a Windows machine in, like, your budget office, right? But what are you using for MDM? How are you controlling those machines to make sure they're secure?
We have, depending on the different machines, so we have some machines that are Intune, some machines that are AD. Everything is born for staff. Everything is born through Azure. And then we're actually in a process right now of also rolling staff MFA for our entire system. We'd only had it for sensitive accounts and privileged accounts up until now, but we successfully rolled MFA for all of our students this year. And so that was sort of a launch to be like, look, our kids can do it. Damn it, you can do it too. And so everything is still born from Microsoft. We just, in order to sort of mitigate the cross-pollination problems you can have, especially with teachers using Microsoft products on Chromebooks with kids. That's why we sort of just pulled back the permissions unless there's a legitimate need.
There's like five questions that I won't answer. So what are you using? You said you're in Azure, but are you using Intune to manage all your devices?
We use it. Some of our devices are Intune and some of them are Active Directory.
Okay.
So it depends on whether it's a device that stays on property, completely plugged in, never goes anywhere, or a device that needs to travel. And we've noticed a big shift in the last 4 years just in the number of devices that need to travel. So with our current refresh, we're switching to a lot more laptops with dots for people just because things have become so nomadic in who's working where. And it works out really well because, like, in our area, we don't have our peninsula's the peninsula itself infrastructure is not the greatest. And we get a lot of wind, we get a lot of rain, and so we have a lot of power outages. And so it's been good to be able to have access to a more mobile fleet for our system in case people are working from home, because we've seen a big increase of that on snow days, ice days. We had a late start yesterday, but our district beneath us canceled school because of all the electrical outages. So it helps out.
What are you using for MFA with your students?
Students were using Clever MFA.
Okay.
And then staff were rolling Duo right now.
So I'm not familiar with Duo. So is that going to work through their personal cell phones, through their district email?
No. So the way we're setting it up is to really just with they can do, if you have a district cell phone, then you can use the app and call it a day. If you're willing to put the app on your personal phone, because it will work with lots of your other MFA that you have to do personally. Obviously, we don't force anybody, but if they're willing to, then we can set it up that way. If not, we have like they're called little Duo tokens, and it's just a little guy that as soon as you push it, it gives you the new code, and then you enter your code in.
So tomorrow here at NCC, I'm presenting on security, an idea of the battlefield, right? Because it's the biggest battlefield the world has ever seen.
It absolutely is.
But when you're talking about security in school district, everything is political.
Mm-hmm.
So as a tech director, I used to meet with my union presidents every single month, one-on-one. That was the best time ever, right? To give them a heads up on what's coming. As you've rolled out MFA with your staff, are you getting support or are you finding roadblocks?
Well, right now we're just starting with our the most recent device refresh, which is our like leadership team. So principals, assistant principals, directors, executive directors, and then our office staff. So we've gotten a little bit of pushback from the office staff, but we've never had a major incident since I've been out here. We had like a DDoS attack that was hitting us our first year. That was a little frustrating, but because we've seen, and I've amplified the stories of districts that have fallen, victim to ransomware. And then we did a big email safety and phishing push with our staff. And so they started to notice the malicious emails more often, reach out and be like, I clicked on a link. I didn't give anything, but I clicked on a link. That helped build it. So we haven't gotten a lot of pushback yet. Once we start pushing to the core of the system, which will be in a couple months, we're anticipating some pushback, but our union leadership, they're on board. They understand that it's a safety and security thing. And a lot of times safety and security isn't convenient, but it's what we have to do to protect our system. And so like I'm doing a session later this week on Hack the Classroom, where it's really focusing on our use of Clever MFA and how we've used that administrative procedure to launch instructional conversations in the classroom. And so that's been a really good thing with kids. And so we're hoping the orchestrated collision of forcing our kids to do it first and seeing how they can manage it might help the adults swallow that cybersecurity safety pill.
So just follow the kid route. What are you using for digital instruction with the kids on digital security?
Our library media specialists all have access to the full Common Sense Media curriculum through Nearpod. And that's really where a lot of it gets born out. So our elementary kids rotate through the library, so they get that targeted instruction. And then we actually also have access to the PLTW elementary computer science modules as well. So they kind of tag team with that. Secondary is a little bit more of a challenge because the kids don't rotate through the libraries. But so our secondary library media specialists will tend to partner with classroom teachers to either prep a lesson and then have the classroom teacher deliver it or co-teach it with them or have the kids come through the library and then engage. So it's kind of a different approach by building and by class level at the secondary. But the elementary get that rotation through. And then I got to start something really cool this year that kind of was born from launching MFA. I was like, okay, I want to continue this conversation with the elementary kids, but I want to be the one doing it. Like, I want to get out of this office and get back in the classroom because that's my background is teaching. And so I launched an initiative where there are 15 children's books that are all tied to digital safety and security, responsible technology use, responsible technology-like balance. And the teachers can choose one of the books, and then we collaborate and co-plan a lesson. I come into the classroom, I read the book, we have the lesson with the kids, and then there's usually some walk-away task for the kids. If they come back and do it, then they get a cool little sticker for their Chromebook that says Tech Tamer, with great power comes great responsibility, and it's branded with our district. And so it's amazing how kids will fight tooth and nail to get a sticker, but I love it.
I just did the classic don't do on a podcast by giving you a thumbs up for Common Sense Media.
Oh yeah.
Sue Thoughts from Common Sense was the very first podcast I ever did.
That's awesome.
I adore Common Sense.
Yeah.
And they're coming out with a whole new curriculum this spring that's going to be more 20 minutes instead of 45 mm-hmm. minutes. So your library media specialists will enjoy it even more. Yeah. There's my second or third plug for Common Sense.
No, I love it. It was kind of a no-brainer whenever we were looking at, okay, what's a turnkey that we can easily give to our educators that then they can bring the magic and bring it to life. And just as a tool itself, I always use Nearpod in the classroom. Just I found it really good for student engagement. So it was like easy peasy, like Nearpod access and Common Sense digital citizenship curriculum. Why not?
Yeah, it's there. So one of the things that interests me listening to you, you have a lot of different platforms.
Yes.
So versus investing in one stack and using that entire stack, you're integrating a lot of different things. Why that choice?
We try to really go needs-based, and that's kind of interesting because we're looking at doing a similar approach with our AI stuff. In a perfect world, you'd be able to get one thing or one package, one stack, and call it a day, and it meets an entire system's need. I think maybe it's coming from the classroom, so being in the education world before the tech world, but and that personalized approach, knowing that while that could be the goal, it's not always how things are going to work out. And so if possible, when I first joined the team out here, our motto was, how might we? So instead of immediately going to, no, that won't work because we don't have a resource within what we're using right now that meets that, it started to be like, well, how might we solve that problem? Is there a way we could integrate this into our system to make it seamless? If not, okay, then we at least looked into it and tried. But if there is a way possible, how can we make that work? And so, for example, like all of our different curriculum programs, like we use at the elementary level, we're using CKLA through Amplify for our literacy. We're using iReady for numeracy, even though iReady does have a reading component to it. It's again, finding about what's working the best with kids and what's going to work best for our kids and for our teachers based on our own unique needs. So I just mentioned with AI, we're exploring several different options, but we're not looking at one option for the whole district. First of all, it's not financially feasible. Like, you can't adopt Gemini or Copilot $25 a month for every single user. But you can look at, okay, what do our teachers need instructionally? What resources are going to be best for them? And then is there something that could pair that gets the kids the exposure? So like we're looking at Magic School for that because A, it just got the Common Sense Media like 92% data privacy rating, which is incredible. But then also teachers have the tools they need, kids have the tools they need, but teachers control the guardrails. But then for our like admin level accounts, do we want something that is like just a ChatGPT Teams where we can collaborate, or do we want something embedded in the programs that we're using? So then we're looking at Gemini because it's embedded within our docs, sheets, slides, Meet, everything there. And then we use Panorama. Student Success is our data dashboard. So that's where all of our attendance, behavior, academic, SEL, climate and culture data, assessment, everything feeds into there. They're launching a new AI capability within that platform, but it's not something that would benefit our classroom teachers. However, it could benefit our counselors and our student support teams that are really using the data in that dashboard to meet the kids' needs. And so it's really just thinking about what's going to meet the need best and how might we make it work within our system if we can.
So how big of a team do you have to manage all these platforms?
So we have, it's kind of behind the scenes, we have about 15 team members, but then I also have access to our instructional specialists, so our TOSAs, our teachers on special assignment. We have four of those that are curriculum-based, so focusing on elementary numeracy and literacy, and then secondary numeracy and literacy. And then I have one instructional technology specialist, teacher on special assignment, focusing on just the ed tech and moving that work forward. And then we all just kind of tag team, but then we have sort of champions for the different platforms. So I have our main Google admin, and then we've trained a couple people below him so we don't have any single points of failure. So we have champions of the platforms, and then we have those that help support and lift the platforms. We were lucky. When I first started out here, we had a programmer that was just brilliant, which is often unheard of in a public school setting, especially this close to Seattle, where they can make three times what a public school can pay them. But so she really laid the groundwork for a really robust integration system. And then when she left, the gentleman that shifted into her role, that coincided when we had a new team member coming back to us from being away for several years, who has a lot of expertise and a lot of really good problem solving skills. And so the two of them have really been able to tag team to take those integrations to the next level. And now they pretty much manage themselves, except when something fails.
You're very lucky.
And that's the thing. I'm terrified of the day when I don't have that programmer brain on the team. And so that's one thing we really try to do is even right now, he's training a technician sort of that's in our tier two. He would be considered our tier three level, training to some technicians in our tier two support to build their own programming skills. And then, I mean, now that we've got access to AI, we've seen the programming capabilities of the team and the coding abilities really skyrocket. And that's above me. I always say my team is the big brains. I'm the magnet that just knows on which brain I need to pull at which time.
I like that. I used to say, I'm not the smartest guy in the room. I know how to hire the smartest people in the room.
Yep. Well, and similar to that, I always say the smartest person in the room is the room. Right. So,
yeah. So you have all these platforms. Data privacy is near and dear to my heart. Mm-hmm. Pre-COVID, so I'll go back that far. I had a gentleman, I was on the Microsoft educator lead team. He was on the Google educator lead team. He said, better get over it. Student data privacy is dead. I just chat at that. You know, it's counterintuitive to me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Out in the world today, which is more valuable on the dark web, do you think? Fifth graders, personal student data, or your credit card?
I'd say fifth graders' personal student data.
It is, because he or she is not going to check their credit report for the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. You're going to see your credit statement next month, right? So what are your concerns? What are you putting into place with all these platforms that tunnel that student data into a way that you think is secure?
I wish I had a really solid answer for that, but that would be a big brain question that I'd have to pull on the really our network team to look into that. But we are, so one of the reasons we did go, when we went to Google, we opted for their Ed Plus version, like the Cadillac version, just because it came with the highest level of student data privacy. And so that was a big thing for us. And then right now we do all the basics of making sure we're funneling through as few ports as possible, having backups of our backups, making sure that everything has an endpoint encryption. And so just though, I'd say the basic general procedures that you try to follow are what we're doing right now. I think AI is going to push us into a different world because that data is going to become even more accessible to others and even more valuable. And so I was just at the AI summit here in Seattle a couple weeks ago and attended a really great session with Peninsula School District, who's really kind of been leading that AI charge. And they had some really good information in regards to student data privacy, especially in regards to AI and like a partnership that they're doing right now with Vanderbilt that I already put our team on. I'm like, Jink, we need to look into this. So they're exploring it. Something like that would be good for us in the future as we shift more towards using AI and hopefully one day being able to use it with actual student data. Right now, that's a no-go in our district.
So you're not working with partner agreements. For instance, when your data is going out to your SIS, your LMS.
Oh, no.
Are you doing partner agreements?
Yeah. We have data sharing agreements with all of our full integrations.
Okay. Data. Because,
you know. Although, you know, we had a question this year that we've never had before. So question, every year our cybersecurity requirements for our cyber insurance get a little bit tighter to keep that good policy that you want. And this year, for the first time, we were asked on the application if every company that we engage in a data sharing agreement has at least a $2 million liability policy.
Oh, I hadn't seen that one.
Yep. You know how many of ours we found out had it?
I'm going to guess zero.
Zero. So then we started panicking because we're like, goodness gracious, if this is the route that no district's going to be able to keep cybersecurity insurance because we can't control what our private company partners are doing in regards to their own liability. But it's just, you know, thinking through that's we think about like forecasting for the future. We saw that question and we're like, okay, forecasting for the future. Let's see where this goes.
Do you restrict your partners from reselling your student data, disaggregated or not?
Yes. Yeah. So no selling a student, obviously.
Right.
No selling of student. I don't know that we do much controlling with the adult. But yeah, student data is locked down.
Okay. So.
And we strip down identifying as much as possible, obviously.
I still have grave concerns about how much companies know about our students, because disaggregating means down to the individual, but you can look at a classroom level data.
Right.
Well, by the time a student's been in your system for 6 years, they know that student intimately, right?
Yeah.
And so the amount of knowledge that someone has on our kids scares the daylights out of me, mm-hmm. especially in today's world where we're crossing state lines and it seems like laws are different, more different than similar.
Well, and I think that anticipate that only growing the disparity between the laws between states with the current political climate and the way things are going. I anticipate that bifurcated lane to continue to grow even more. And you're absolutely right. What does it mean when a kid goes from one state to another, and what gets protected and what doesn't get protected? And if they're going from, luckily, I do feel that maybe our proximity to just Seattle as a tech hub and then just the Pacific Northwest and Washington State in general, I think we're doing better than a lot of others. But then I wonder what happens if so a kid coming from here and then going to another state, what is available? What does get put out there? I have a vested interest in this. I have a parent of four kids. I've got four teens within our school system, a sophomore, two freshmen, and an eighth grader. So like this is very, very applicable. And I have a lot of concerns just in general about the data that's out there about our young kids.
Right.
Whether we get outside of the school and then get into their social media and all that stuff. Like it's a whole new ball game. And I feel like we are playing catch up in a way that we'll never catch up.
I agree with you. And once it's out there, it cannot be erased. I'm the parent of two kids, mine are in their 20s. The one of whom stays totally off of social media. His dad taught him almost too well.
Hey, right? Okay.
he just refuses.
Well, mine love to rebel against me. So they're all on social media, but they're limited. I mean, because I'm that mean dad that knows the brain science behind screen use and mm-hmm. limits their time and doesn't let them have unfettered access to social media. But it's alarming what's out there. I was talking with someone recently. We were talking about it through the lens of AI, but I kind of feel like it applies to student data privacy as well. It's like we gave people the keys to a car and we gave them a brand new car and said, here, go. And then they started driving and they drove for a few months. And then we came back and we're like, here's a few guidelines we'd like for you to follow. But we let them keep on drinking. And then we came back and we're like, here's a few more guidelines. But we're constantly behind the curve. And I don't know how we catch up.
within your district? Most Washington districts have similar coding. So 2022 is the internet privacy for most Washington districts. Have you guys rewritten your policies to try to put those guidelines in place to get ahead?
We've been trying to. So our 2022 policy and our 2022 P have both been updated twice since I've been out here. And we usually, I mean, we try to go along with the WASDA recommendations of the shifts and stuff while making sure that it meets the needs of our system. But the biggest change that we've made recently was this year to our 2022 P, because that's when we started bringing the AI into the conversation, which is also bringing student data privacy to the forefront of the conversation. So like just yesterday, I was working on our guidance for teachers for AI and the ethical guidance. And so going through looking at the human-centered guidance that OSPI put out, but then also making a couple tweaks to be even more blatantly specific. Like I was a little concerned that the OSPI guidance doesn't specifically address in the ethical considerations personally identifiable information. I wanted that very specifically in there. Right now, with where things stand, we're never putting PII into our AI at all. We're not comfortable with it. Even if we're using a walled garden, we're still not doing that yet. And so I anticipate this just being an iterative thing, because we're driving the car and then getting our guidelines and our rules for driving that car as we're on a road trip.
Right. Does your current filtering solution deal with the AI well and self-harm monitoring the AI?
It does. We switched this year to Go Guardian, and we use Cisco Umbrella for our network. And so student Chromebooks have the double filtering of when they're on our network, and then also through Go Guardian. Go Guardian lets you do the categorical blocking like all the programs do. And so we do have AI categorically blocked for kids just for this year, because next year we're going to start opening up tools, because we're going to hopefully have platforms that we've adopted.
Right.
But so right now for kids, the only thing that we try to give them access to is Magic School, because our teachers are the teachers who are using it. It is a walled garden. They do have to log in and doesn't collect any identifiable data whatsoever for the kids. So the self-harm is right now, it's just because we block all access. Now, I have a member of our team weekly going into our smart alerts and our flagged activity, which is the vast majority of it's false. False flags, nothing's really wrong. But we go through and look at that list every week to see what did they find. What have they found that they can now get to that we need to restrict? And so, I mean, it is the constant game of whack-a-mole. Yep. Because your kids that want to find fun stuff are going to find fun stuff. Now, one of the interesting and unique challenges that I get to deal with is my youngest son is one of those kids. We have two layers of filtering for our students. He could be on the full access, which gives you access to everything that we haven't specifically limited, or we have our restricted access. And those are the kids that are just on an allow alone list.
Mm-hmm.
And so that list is populated with all of our curriculum links. And so we've taken a while to build that very walled garden for those kids. But one of the benefits of it is we were able to, using our filtering program, we were able to take that walled garden list of allows and share it with all of our teachers. And so if they want to have a session where the kids, they know that they're only accessing district curriculum or their Google workspace, that they can enable that quick list for like a quick little lockdown without having to think about how am I going to go through and program all the allows and stuff. So it's working well. The kids don't like it. We've heard more complaints from kids this year about our filtering, but we've heard way less complaints from staff. So it's finding that balance and just trying to help the kids be set up for success.
I don't think people outside of your and my profession understand that process at all. The average parent does not have a clue what we're doing for their child, right?
Yeah.
One of the things I used to do is I'd take school board members to Starbucks with one filtered machine and one unfiltered machine. We would put our backs to the wall so no one can see our screens, mm-hmm. and we would play show and tell. Mm-hmm. It was the best school board session ever, because they began to really appreciate all the efforts that the professionals were doing to protect our children.
Yeah, and that's what it is. I mean, we take student safety incredibly incredibly serious on our team, especially in regards like the notifications that we get if there is a kid, because we do have self-harm notifications for students. And a couple members of our team came to me and they were just like, I'm getting asked to do these investigations and I don't feel like I'm equipped to do the investigation. And so we started discussing, so who owns what aspect of an investigation? Mm-hmm. What should be on the education administrator side within the building? And then what does the tech role look like? And the tech role really is, if admin reaches out, we have a concern, we saw this, can you look into it? Once we find evidence of misuse, that's what we communicate. We're not then going in and doing this massive deep dive audit for years of an account. It's like, yes, there's evidence here. Yes, you need to address it. Yes, they've violated the RUP. And so tackle it there. But it's scary because I get every notification for the district. And there are other members on our exec council that do now too, but it used to really just be me and the programmer who would tackle things with me. And it wears on you. Like I think I have a good wall up now where I can sort of compartmentalize as I'm looking at things. But I mean, when you're reaching out to a family on a Saturday night because you saw something that you're just would just be a kid, just mouthing off or looking up a random thing, but you know, you get that feeling in the pit of your stomach and it's real.
I'll share this with you. We turned on self-harm monitoring on a Wednesday. On Thursday, we passed out one-to-one devices at a junior high school where I used to be the principal. Thursday night at midnight, my phone rings. We saved the life that night within 30 hours of turning it on. It was actually a student I knew. It forever. I don't care what the cost is.
No, I agree.
I don't care what the cost is.
That's where I am. We had my first year within the first 6 months, we had notification go off, but it wasn't one of our students. It was a student from the district by us messaging one of our students.
Oh.
And it was on the weekend, but within like an hour, we had someone from that district going and meeting with the family. And again, we were able to save a life. And it's just when you see it play out like that, mm-hmm. you're like, okay, this is worth it.
There's no question.
No.
So in our final piece, let's switch subjects a little bit. Out in the hallway, before we came in, we were chatting about AI and the future of AI and what it's going to be. 3 years, 10 years. What's it going to do to education?
Gosh, 3 years, I think I may be able to posit some ideas. I don't know about 10 years. The rate of adoption and the rate of change right now is so astronomical that to think about what 10 years could be is really like mind-blowing for me. But what I see in 3 years is I see a finally, hopefully, this could be me being hopeful, but making the shift towards more personalized learning experiences than we've ever been able to do before. I did my dissertation on the attitudinal and structural barriers to implementing personalized learning in public schools. And because both are so great, but the attitudinal is not that great, but your structural, your PD time, your canned curriculum, your grading practices, your assessments, all of those work against providing personalized learning for kids. I see AI as being finally the catalyst that helps us get there. And I think we'll start seeing that within 3 years. I think we'll see a shift. I think a lot of our curriculum programs will be adopting it within that manner because that's the cherry on top of what we've not been able to get to, that I think we're finally going to be able to get to. I think the disruption, though, will have ripples all across the board. I think we'll see some in education just decide this is just too much for me. Like it's a bridge too far. A, just the capabilities, learning the new tools, understanding it. So I think we'll see resignations and retirements happening. But I'm also optimistic that I think it will bring new blood back into the teaching world and back into the education world if it's done correctly. What terrifies me, though, is I also was optimistic about COVID, like the silver lining is we're going to come back and we'll be able to finally revolutionize learning and make it what it needs to be for our kids now, skills-based, not memorization-based. And then we fought as fast as we could to get back into the old traditional model. I don't think AI will let us stay in our traditional model.
How will AI change assessment practices?
Well, I think, first of all, it's going to have to, I think we're going to shift from product to process, which I think we always should have been doing. So I think you'll see a lot more focus paid on the journey towards the final destination, as opposed to here's my final product of what I made to show what I learned. I think it's going to force us to rethink assessment entirely. And you hear it like from some of the teachers that are really concerned about AI, you hear, well, okay, we're launching AI. Are we also launching AI checkers? And I get pushback when I say we're not right now because they don't work. Disenfranchised are already disenfranchised populations at a much larger rate. But so I think it, instead of thinking, how are we going to have these checkers that let me use my traditional forms of assessment and tell me if a kid does it, it's going to be thinking about what does the new assessment look like, to where I'm not worried about AI as a cheating component for it. I know Brad, our instructional technology specialist on the team, went to an assessment session a couple of weeks ago at the Innovation Summit, and it was focusing on assessing collaborative conversations. And so they were using, I forget which recorder they were, just some random voice recorder, but they were using it to record the whole group collaborative conversation and then feeding it through AI with a rubric to see how did we nail the skill of collaboration.
That's awesome.
Right? Like, that was so cool to me. And it's, I think that's where we're going to need to go. What are the skills we need our kids to master, and how can we capture and assess those skills through a collaborative process as they go through school? I think one of the big things we lost from COVID is collaboration, student-to-student collaboration, especially in the younger grades. And I really hope that AI can get us back into that, both collaborating with AI, but even more importantly, using the resources of AI to enhance how we're collaborating and working together with each other.
So after principal, I was curriculum director before I became technology. And in curriculum, I am a fan of the Common Core, which I know a lot of people get upset at, right? But it's just defining the problem.
Yeah, exactly.
But if we look at that K-3 space, it's about what you know. You have to learn certain skills.
Yeah.
But after that, it becomes process-oriented. Mm-hmm. And I always dreamt, as a history teacher, of putting a problem in the middle of the table and having five kids solve it, mm-hmm. and evaluating using all the tools.
Yeah.
How will they use it? Because that's what they're going to do as adults.
Yeah.
I'm optimistic about AI getting us there. It finally will take over tabulating all that data and putting it into some kind of a rubric, some kind of a schematic that will allow us to evaluate their ability to process and learn.
Yep, I agree completely.
And that's what employers need, because the jobs that are going to exist in 20 years don't exist today.
No. Well, and it's just, you know, it sounds cliche because we've been saying it for so long, but we haven't been able to achieve it. It's shifting from the sage on the stage to the guide on the side.
My favorite quote ever.
Like, we keep saying it, but we don't do it. But now it's like, we really have to. It is not about me taking what is in my brain or what is in the textbook or the digital curriculum and putting it in your brain to live there. That's not what it needs to be. It has to be about the skills that we are fostering within kids to tackle this world that is rapidly changing. And I know every generation says that, but right now the possibilities are endless. And so how are we preparing our kids to tackle those problems? Because they're not going to reach in and pull out the date that they remembered of a war range. I said that just because you said you're a history teacher. And dates are important, but is it more about being able to regurgitate facts, or is it more about being able to look at what happened in the past and transfer that knowledge into solving a problem of the present? And that's where we need to get, and that's where we've been fighting to get. I think AI could get us there.
Since you just channeled me as a teacher so well, I just want to end on a positive note.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
I have thoroughly enjoyed talking to you.
Same. Thanks for calling me. And I always look forward to talking about the future of education, because, like I said, I've got four kids of my own, but just in general, education saved my life and provided me countless opportunities, and every single kid deserves that, regardless of who's in front of the classroom, regardless of their zip code, regardless of the home that they're coming from or the resources that they have at home. And that's what I'm rooting myself in right now, is optimism of we're finally going to be able to design systems to reach the full edges.
North Kitsap School District's very fortunate to have you there.
Well, thank you very much. I love my district and I love the work I get to do.
And hopefully you all will join us for the next edition of Vetted. Have a great day. Stay safe.